The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, shit, we had a crazy week of basketball this week. Some motherfuckers just went off. I mean, we had multiple dudes just taking over. So let's get right into some NBA talk, because I'm going to keep it real. I don't pay full-on attention to basketball, really, up until Christmas, just because, you know, there's so much football and stuff going on, and then now college basketball is getting started. So I really haven't watched a lot of basketball, especially because the Lakers fucking suck ass, so they have given me absolutely nothing to watch. I haven't paid as much attention as I normally do to it, but this week we had some amazing performances, so let's talk about them. So on Monday night, Kevin Durant in the Brooklyn Nets, they got a huge win over the Orlando Magic, 109-102. But just the big news of that game was Kevin Durant just went off. He had one of probably the greatest shooting nights you could really have in NBA history. He had 45 points on 19 of 24 for shooting, and he was 50% of his team's points that night. So he just had a crazy night, and he did it in such an efficient way where he only missed, what, 5 shots? So that's just crazy how many points he scored in that game. And, yeah, it was only against the Orlando Magic, but still, hey, that's a crazy scoring night from Kevin Durant. And he's about the only positive thing you could say about the Brooklyn Nets at this point. Then on Tuesday night, Luka freaking Doncic. This guy went off against the Golden State Warriors. The Dallas Mavericks got a big win against Golden State, 116-113. But it was just an awesome showing from both Steph Curry and Luka Doncic. But Luka had the game. Dude had 41 points, 12 rebounds, 12 assists, 4 steals, and 4 three-pointers made. So yeah, dude had a triple-double. He's really been just on fire this season. And it sucks because Dallas is just playing okay basketball. I mean, they're like a 500 team right now, and they really haven't made a lot of noise beyond Luka Doncic. And it sucks because he's such a freaking fantastic player, but it just kind of feels like the Mavericks are going to just waste his talent, and he's just going to be this dude who just is so dominating for no fucking reason because he has nobody around him to help him. But regardless, he was able to just carry the Mavericks to this win against the Golden State Warriors. And like I said, Steph Curry, he and Steph were just like trading shots back and forth all night. And it was just an insane game that went into overtime. And Luka and the Dallas Mavericks ended up getting the win. Then on Wednesday night, we had two more players go off for two separate teams. So Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics, they got their 5th win in a row against the Miami Heat in a win 134-121. But it was really just Jason Tatum taking over. He's another dude who's just dominating the entire team. It's just he's got some good pieces around him. But really, I mean, Jason Tatum is the Boston Celtics, at least at this point he is. He had 49 points, 11 rebounds, and he made 8 three-pointers. And that's the second time he's done this season, where he's had over 40 points, 10-plus rebounds, and he's made that many three-pointers in 2 games this season already. And that's it's pretty historic. I can't recall how many other people have done it, but it's only like 2 other people have done this. So Jason Tatum is also dominating the season, and he went off on Wednesday night. And then Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns on the same night on Wednesday night, the Suns just obliterated the Chicago Bulls for their sixth win in a row, 132-113. But Devin Booker, in only 3 quarters of action, had 51 points. He shot 20 for 25, 6 assists, and made 6 3-pointers. So Devin Booker also had an amazing night. When you could score 51 points in only three quarters, he sat the entire fourth quarter. That's what kind of domination he had. But yeah, when you could score 51 points in three quarters, that fucking says a lot. Devin Booker has just, he's also having a phenomenal season. You're just not really hearing about it because, you know, there's other players out there having really good seasons. And it's really just with Devin Booker, it's just business as usual when he scores 51 points in a night, in three quarters. So that was the week of the NBA where we just had dudes balling uncontrollably and just dropping bombs. They're 3-point shots. They're just looking really good right now. And it's just basketball. There's a lot of good basketball being played right now, except for the Los Angeles Lakers, of course. All right, so let's get into the NFL. And we had a Thursday night football game last night. Buffalo Bills beat the New England Patriots 24-10. It was a straight snooze fest from the New England Patriots. I'm really not surprised by it. Just because their offense is just terrible. And you could even see the frustration from Mac Jones on the sideline. He was kind of frustrated at one point. Really the only offense that they get is from Ramondre Stevenson. He's a solid running back. I mean, he gets a great movement, or he could just bust through a defensive line, and he's just great with the second effort on the ground. So he's really great. But other than that, they just have one of the most vanilla offenses. And even though they busted out last week and had a very, very great game offensively, I'm not shocked or surprised what I saw from the Patriots on the field last night, because their offense has been just terrible. Defensively, they look really good. They had a really good sack on Josh Allen, which ended up being a forced fumble, and they did end up getting the ball back. But unfortunately for them, and this was right before halftime, their offense was so stagnant, and they did get in field goal position, but unfortunately their kicker ended up missing the field goal, which was absolutely hilarious. So, for the Patriots, it's just an overall bad season. They are in playoff contention, but I just kind of feel like the Patriots are just going to fade out. And even if they do make the playoffs, they are not going to make any noise against anybody, because this offense is terrible. On the other side of the field, Buffalo Bills, they looked very good. Josh Allen, 22 for 33, 223 yards and two touchdowns. He did have that fumble, but other than that, it was just a very solid game from him. Stephon Diggs, he also had another great game, 92 yards, one touchdown. And their defense held it down as well. So another good win for the Buffalo Bills. And just another poor showing from the New England Patriots. So let's get into the rest of the Week 13 matchups. On Sunday, the afternoon games start with Pittsburgh Steelers at the Atlanta Falcons. Right now, the Falcons are a 1.5-point favorite. This is, to me, just going to be the matchup of the two shitty teams. So it should actually be a pretty decent game. I'm just kind of feeling the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. I don't think they're obviously a good team, but going up against a terrible team like Atlanta, I think they actually will play a pretty solid game. They do have TJ Watt back, who's been a driving force ever since in the last couple of games that he's been back. So you can really tell the defense looks so much better with him in it. Kenny Pickett's starting to look a little better. They are going to be missing Najee Harris, it looks like, for this game. So that their ground attack may suffer, but lucky for them, they're playing the Atlanta Falcons, who to me have just been spiraling. They started the season off okay. They weren't getting any wins, but offensively they were doing pretty well. But now they've seemed to have come back down to earth. Marcus Mariota is playing like shit. There really isn't anything good to say about the Atlanta Falcons. I kind of expect this to be a really boring game overall, but I do think the Steelers are going to get the win 20-17. Then the Green Bay Packers are at the Chicago Bears. Right now, the Packers are a 2.5-point favorite. It looks like Aaron Rodgers is going to play this week, and he does own the Bears. No matter how shitty the Packers are, this is still a division matchup, so it actually is probably going to be a pretty decent game, if anything. We don't know if Justin Fields is going to be playing yet. Really, at this point, I don't think it matters if he does. Chicago's offense is pretty bad. Actually, their team is pretty bad. And with the fact that the Packers own the Bears, I just kind of feel like the Packers are going to get this win 21-14. Then the Jacksonville Jaguars are at the Detroit Lions. Right now, the Lions are a 1.5-point favorite. Both of these teams, they're pretty similar to me, where they have the capability of scoring a lot of points and looking like a pretty solid team, but then they also can just let you down in the end, and then they usually lose. So one of these teams has to win unless they tie, which is always a possibility with either one of these guys. But I'm leaning more towards Jacksonville. They seem to put together a really good game offensively. I kind of feel like Trevor Lawrence is only going to grow from here, and just last week was a building block for them for the future. Whereas Detroit, they're a pretty solid team. They could get a win. I feel like this is going to be a close game, but I just kind of feel like Detroit's going to blow it in the end, as they normally do. And I have the Jacksonville Jaguars getting the win 24-20. Then the New York Jets are at the Minnesota Vikings. Right now, the Vikings are a 3.5-point favorite. The Jets looked a lot better with Mike White at quarterback, so he did provide them a spark plug. But unfortunately for them, I just think the Minnesota Vikings are a much better team than them. Offensively, the Vikings have one of the best offenses in the league. Kirk Cousins has he hasn't had as many mistakes as he normally has. He's been able to manage the games very well. He does. I mean, it's very helpful when you do have Justin Jefferson out there, where you can literally just toss up the ball to him. He's basically like Randy Moss, where he can have triple, quadruple freaking coverage on him. And if you just toss him up the ball and he's able to out jump them or somehow get just a hand or a finger on the freaking ball, that dude's going to come down with it almost 99.9% of the time at this rate. So it makes it a little bit easier for Cousins in that matter. But I also kind of feel like Dalvin Cook has been quiet the last couple of weeks, so I feel like he's going to go off in this game. And I feel like Minnesota is really just going to trample all over the Jets, 31-20. Then the Washington Commanders are at the New York Giants. Right now, the Commanders are a 1.5-point favorite. These two teams actually face off against each other again in 2 weeks, and I just kind of feel like they're going to split both of those matchups. So in this matchup, I'm leaning more towards the Giants, even though Washington has been more on a winning streak than the Giants. Right now, the Commanders have been on more of an up streak, where the Giants have been on a downslide, but they're both pretty awful teams, in my opinion. There's really nothing good to say about either one of them, so I feel like since it's a division matchup, the Giants are at home. I'm leaning towards the Giants in this one, 20-10. Then the Tennessee Titans are at the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Eagles are a 5.5-point favorite. And the Titans, I just kind of feel like they're going to come into this game, and it's going to be one of those games where they just get absolutely demolished. The Titans are not a bad team. They have a really good defense. And then, of course, Derrick Henry is the best running back in the league. So, I mean, if you really just keep handing the ball off to him, you're pretty solid. But the Eagles, they have a lot more going on. I mean, offensively, they have one of the best ground attacks in the league, because Jalen Hurts can run. They've got Sanders in the backfield. But then you also have really good wide receivers. And then they also have a really good defense who can cause turnovers as well. So I kind of feel like this is going to be a Philadelphia dominating game, where I just kind of feel like they're going to dominate from start to finish, and they're really going to look like a very solid team this week against the Titans, who I just don't think, outside of Derrick Henry, offensively, they're very vanilla. And I feel like this game's going to kind of get away from them early, and it's going to be too late for them to come back. And I have the Philadelphia Eagles winning big, 28-13. Then the Denver Broncos are at the Baltimore Ravens. Right now, the Ravens are an 8.5-point favorite. Denver is just looking like shit this year. They just get worse and worse every single week. And it's not just one thing. It is like everything. The defense is pretty solid, but even the defense has failed them in certain moments this year as well. So, I mean, the Broncos just look like shit. The Ravens, they kind of are tapering off as well. They started off the season very hot. But as the season has rolled on, they have started to look more and more weak. On both the offense and defensive side of the ball. But I feel like this is going to be a good get-right game for them. They are at home. I feel like they've felt embarrassed offensively these last couple of weeks, so I expect them to step it up this week and get the win 23-13. And then the last early game we have is probably the shittiest game of the week, but it has a storyline to it, and that would be the Cleveland Browns at the Houston Texans. Right now, the Browns are a 7.5-point favorite. This is Deshaun Watson's first game back from his suspension. So this is actually his first game he's played in a year and a half. I did rant about how what a stupid cunt he was the other day for not coming out for his press conference to speak with the press, as I think he's just hiding because he doesn't want to answer all the tough questions they have for him about all his lawsuits and all that shit. But he did have his press conference yesterday, but of course, he was only asking, quote, football, or answering, quote, football questions, and he just looked like an even bigger cunt to me. So I'm actually going to begin to call him Deshaun Cuntson from now on, because that is all he is a total fucking cunt. Now to the football side of things. The Browns, I think it sucks for them because the dude hasn't played in a year and a half. So I actually think that's going to be the problem here, is I just feel like he's going to be very rusty. And if you don't recall, in the preseason, he looked like shit. And when you look like shit in the preseason, that actually says a lot. So I kind of have a feeling Deshaun Watson's going to come out and have a bad game. And even though Nick Chubb, he's been one of the best running backs in the league all season, the Browns are still not a good team. So it doesn't really matter if Nick Chubb is good or not, because they're still a terrible team. And while the Texans are a shitty ass team as well, and they are obviously playing for the first round pick in the very first pick in the draft next year. But I feel like they're going to step up for this one. I feel like they're going to get up and actually want to win this game, because Deshaun Watson did leave them. So I feel like the fans are going to be booing him, and this is going to be a good chance, for the Texans to actually sell some game tickets, because otherwise they wouldn't be selling any game tickets. As a matter of fact, this game, it has like such little draw to it that I live here in Austin, Texas, and we normally get all of the Houston Texans games, unfortunately, something I fucking hate. But there are occasions, like if there's a week where there's a much better game on, they put that better game on, or the Texans just aren't selling, they do the whole blackout shit because nobody's going to the games. So usually the last, I want to say like three or four games of the season, they pretty much just say, fuck the Texans. Well, this week's game is so uninteresting, it's not even going to be shown here in Austin, Texas. Thank fucking God. I would rather watch any other game this week than that shit. I would rather watch Jacksonville at Detroit, because I think that's going to be much more competitive than this shitty Cleveland at Houston game. But I do have the Houston Texans winning this one 17-10, just based solely upon the fact I feel like this would be the one game they're going to want to show up for. And as I said, I don't think Deshaun Cuntson's going to come in and make a big difference. I think he's going to be more of a negative presence than anything, because he hasn't played in a year and a half, and he looked like shit in preseason, so I don't expect this dude to really come out and be good at all. So we'll see how that goes. Now the afternoon games, we have the Seattle Seahawks at the Los Angeles Rams. Right now the Seahawks are a 5.5-point favorite. This had much more promise at the beginning of the season because the Rams are just an atrocious team. I mean, we got to talk about how bad the Rams are this year. I mean, these are the defending Super Bowl champions, and they are by far the worst defending Super Bowl champions of all time at this rate. I mean, really, if you look at it statistically, they are the worst defending Super Bowl champions of all time. They're playing like shit, and it's so funny because they've been known, basically ever since Sean McVay took over, they've been known for being so offensive savvy and just like having all these amazing play calls and having all these great big explosive plays on offense, and they're able to score within a matter of seconds. And then defensively, they have all these great players. Aaron Donald, just one of the greatest defensive players of all time. And usually that's what they're known for. But this year, they have just been one of the worst teams to watch. I mean, I'm not a Rams fan, but if they're on, I want to at least see some type of competitive football. And they're so bad. Whereas the Seahawks, they've actually been a good team this year. Even though they're on a two-game losing streak, I actually think they're going to come out and they're going to roll over the Rams, because there's going to be... excuse me. There's going to be some... basically no Rams are playing this week. No Matthew Stafford, no Cooper Kupp, and Aaron Donald's out this week too. So none of their perennial players are playing this week. And so I feel like this is a good game for Seattle to get right back to win their winning ways. And I feel like Seattle's going to roll over the Rams 28-13. Then the Miami Dolphins at the San Francisco 49ers. This is going to be a great matchup. At least on paper, it looks like it should be. Right now, the Niners are a 3.5-point favorite. This, of course, is the coach of Miami, Mike McDaniel. He used to be one of the coordinators for the San Francisco 49ers, and he and Shanahan, they've been great friends, I guess, for something like 30 years now. So they're actually legit friends. They've been working with each other their whole career. So this is one of those cool kind of matchups where it's like, who's going to win just because they've been around each other so long. Obviously, I doubt there's any type of animosity between the two of them, but they probably haven't been talking this week either, just because I'm sure they both want to win this game. Now, both teams are coming in hot, but in my personal opinion, the 49ers are one of the best teams in the league, not just the NFC, but the league. They're very complete. They have great offensive weapons. Even though their offense hasn't been that electric the last couple of weeks, they're still capable of it. And defensively, though, they have one of the best defenses in the league. And they can turn the ball over. They have quarterbacks running for their motherfucking lives. And that's kind of what I feel like is going to happen to the Dolphins this week. The Dolphins have a great offense, but defense is just meh. It's not that good. So I kind of feel like the Niners' defense is going to have Tua running for his life, and I feel like they're going to force him into some uncharacteristic turnovers, and then that's going to set the Niners' offense up in good scoring range, and they'll get some easy scores. And so I do think it's going to be a good, competitive, and close game, but I think the 49ers are just the better team, and I think their defense is just going to take over, and they're really going to limit what the Dolphins are able to do on the offensive side of the ball. And then the 49ers are just going to take advantage. And I think they're going to get the scores in the end. And I think the 49ers are going to get the win 21-17. Then the other big game of the weekend, Kansas City Chiefs at the Cincinnati Bengals. This is a rematch of last year's AFC Championship game, which was just fucking insane to watch. Right now, the Chiefs are a 3.5-point favorite, but I have a feeling this is going to be like the exact same game we saw from the championship game last year, where it's going to be just a Mahomes-Joe Burrow duel, where it's just like score after score. Both dudes are just going to be outscoring each other, and I really feel like this is going to come down to whoever has the ball last. Could end up being an overtime game if we're lucky, but I feel like it's just going to be one of those games where it's just back and forth, and it's going to... whoever gets that last drive gets the win. I'm leaning towards Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati gets to win 31-30, only because I feel like Kansas City is at this point in the season where they've been rolling, but you could tell that they've been close to losing. And the only reason why they haven't lost is just because their opponents don't know how to finish the game. Whereas the Bengals actually have played the Chiefs very well. Mahomes led Chiefs very well. So I think the Bengals are going to get the better of the Chiefs in this one just because I feel like the Chiefs are due for a loss. And the Bengals, they aren't scared of the Chiefs. And the Bengals are on the upside right now. And not that the Chiefs are on the downside. Of course they're not. But I just kind of feel like right now, just the way the universe is working, I feel like the Bengals are going to get this win 31-30. But regardless, it should be a damn good game. Then rounding out the afternoon games, we have the Los Angeles Chargers at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Chargers are a 2.5-point favorite. And, you know, this is just a weird matchup. I mean, obviously, it's a division matchup, so it should be a good game. But the Raiders are just such a weird team. You never know what you're going to get from them. Are they going to be good? Are they going to just lay an egg? Are they going to be competitive and then blow it in the end? Or are they going to win in the end? So they've pretty much had like a heart attack game every single game this season. But I don't think that's going to happen this week because I kind of feel like the Chargers are on the upswing right now. They've had they got a good win last week. And I think they're just going to come in this week and take advantage of that And the Raiders are coming off of an overtime win, which usually and I mean, the Chargers are coming off of a cardiac type win last week as well. But I just kind of feel like the Chargers, they're more on the upswing of things, where the Raiders, they have been in such disarray this season. I just kind of feel like I see them laying an egg in this one. And I have the Chargers winning 27-17. And then the Sunday night football matchup is the Indianapolis Colts at my Dallas Cowboys. Right now, the Cowboys are a 9.5-point favorite. And I just expect this game to be an ass-kicking from the Cowboys. Mostly because on the offensive side of the ball for the Colts, Matt Ryan looks like shit. It feels like every time this dude drops back to pass, he's going to get sacked, or he's going to throw an interception, or it's just a loss. He's just so bad. He just needs to retire. And now he goes up this week against Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence and Trayvon Diggs, and just this Dallas defense that is literally killing quarterbacks. So I just kind of have a feeling that Matt Ryan is going to be on his ass this entire game. I honestly wouldn't be shocked if he got injured in this game. I'm not saying I want him to get injured. I'm just saying I feel like he's going to be getting it from all angles in this game, where he's probably going to get injured because it's going to look bad. And then I just feel like the Dallas defense is going to set their offense up in good field position. I feel like our ground attack is spectacular between Zeke and Pollard. And I just kind of feel like it's going to be one of those nice, easy rolling games for the Cowboys. Although I hope the Cowboys as a team are not overlooking the Colts. It doesn't sound like they are. Don't treat this as a trap game. But I feel like the Cowboys are going to kick their ass 34-10. All right, and then since I do love boxing, I did see this weird story that came about this week about Manny Pacquiao. Now, Manny Pacquiao, he's no longer a professional boxer. He's been out of boxing for a few years now, but he is a legendary boxer. He wasn't one of my favorites. I didn't really care much for his style of boxing. As a matter of fact, I respect both he and Floyd Mayweather as boxers. Just, I respect their careers. I like them. But for me personally, neither one of them really were fighters that I enjoyed much watching. I'm more of a heavyweight. But then when I say that, there's actually quite a few boxers who aren't heavyweights who I've enjoyed as well. So I just, for me personally, Pacquiao, Mayweather, they never did it for me. That rivalry never did it for me. And then, of course, they faced off against each other way past their prime, so it didn't even fucking matter when they did face off against each other. But anyways, this story is actually not about that. But for me personally, I just wanted to put it out there that Manny Pacquiao was not like a fighter I loved or hated. I was more indifferent towards. I didn't really follow him that greatly, but I respect his career. With that being said, back in the Philippines, that's where he's from, there was a match against Nidal Hussein in the Philippines, and it was in the year 2000, and there was a referee refereeing this who was also a Filipino by the name of Carlos Padilla, who just had a recent interview this week in which he admitted that he basically cheated and let Manny Pacquiao win this fight. Now, as a boxing fan, we all know that sometimes fights are fixed, and unfortunately, it's just a part of the sport. None of us like this. The fans don't like it. The fighters don't like it. The managers don't like it. I'm sure some of the managers do, because it's really more of a money thing. But in this case, you know, it was a Philippines fight, and then you've got a Filipino and Manny Pacquiao fighting, and then you have a Filipino ref and Carlos Padilla. But all of us in boxing know that fights can be fixed, and just, it's unfortunately a part of it. Now, in this instance, Carlos Padilla, he's giving an interview in which he talks about how he fixed the fight is at one point in the fight, I believe it was at the fourth round, Pacquiao gets knocked to the ground. And so he starts to count, and he could tell that Pacquiao is cross-eyed, and if he counts too fast, that he's basically out for the count, and that Hussein's going to get this win. So what he said he did is he slowed down the count on purpose. And then Pacquiao was able to get up, and then the fight resumed, and then Pacquiao ended up getting a TKO in the 10th round, I believe. And Pacquiao ended up going on to have an amazing career. This is what launched his career, basically. And then unfortunately for Hussein, his career would go in the opposite direction. He had a pretty decent career, but it would not be the heights of Pacquiao's career. And that's what kind of fight this was, is basically whoever won this fight between Hussein and Pacquiao was getting another fight to basically break into mainstream boxing and become a household name, which Manny Pacquiao eventually would go on to become. And so this ref, he helped Manny Pacquiao win this fight. And Pacquiao would go on to have an amazing career. Now, in my opinion, obviously, to me, it doesn't take away anything from Manny Pacquiao, the fighter. And it doesn't take it anyway from away Nadal Hussein, the fighter, either. Hussein's pissed off about this, by the way. I'll get into that in a bit here. But to me, it doesn't take away from Pacquiao, because it's not like he was in on this. He couldn't tell the ref what to do, at least from what the ref said. We don't know that. But Pacquiao was obviously a spectacular fighter. But the thing that was most striking about this interview is that the ref, Carlos Padilla, was like basically laughing and like proud of being a cheater and like cheating Nadal Hussein out of this win that he deserved, and then giving the fight to Manny Pacquiao. And he was proud of it. He was laughing about it, and he really gave zero fucks about it. And then so Nadal Hussein saw that, and basically his response was, A, we knew that that's what the ref did. I mean, you could always tell, boxers always know when the ref is basically in favor of the other fighter. And so he knew. He's like, yeah, we knew in real time. We've always known after the fight. We still know to this day that, yes, I got screwed out of that fight. But he even said the same thing that I just said, that it's so shocking that this ref is like laughing and happy and like rejoicing that he took this opportunity away from Nadal Hussein and gave it to Manny Pacquiao. So that's what was most striking about this. Obviously, like I said, if you're a boxing fan, we all know there have been fights that have been fixed, and none of us like it, at least from a fan point of view, and then of course the boxer's point of view. I think that's most fucked up to the actual boxers in the ring, because they put their life on the line. Dudes literally still to this day die in the boxing ring, okay? And they get to have these wins taken away from them is so fucked up, because they do so much to just fight and get themselves in shape, and just what they do, it's just nuts, and it's fucked up for them. But from a fan perspective, it sucks too, because I don't want to see a fixed fight, but it happens. And that's what was most striking to me, is just the way the ref reacted to it, how he was just laughing and a total fucking asshole about it. All right, so moving on to baseball, we do have free agency going on right now, and we do have, I was looking over the free agency list, and we do have quite a few really top-notch free agents out there this year. And so this week, I'm deciding to do my top five list on the top five MLB free agents available right now. So let's start it off with number five, Carlos Correa, the shortstop of the Minnesota Twins. He just spent this last year with the Twins, and then of course began his career, and is mostly known for playing with the Houston Astros. He won a World Series with the Houston Astros. So that's what he's most known for. But I mean, playing with the Twins, he went right up there and he made an immediate impact with them, not only offensively, but defensively as well. So he is for sure one of the best free agents out there, especially at the shortstop position. Shortstop is always a position you just absolutely need. If you have a good shortstop, you're more than likely having a good team and more than likely going to the playoffs for sure. So Correa has made an instant impact on the Twins, and he, of course, made an impact with the Astros. So whoever he signs with, he's more than likely going to make an impact with. He's not that injury prone. He has suffered some injuries over his time, but I mean, that's baseball. But he's not like one of those injury prone dudes where he's like always on the injured list. So I feel like whoever he signs with is getting a great, great player. Right now, it's a possibility he could re-sign with the Twins. But it's also looking like my San Francisco Giants are in the running for him as well. So I would love to see him in a San Francisco Giants uniform. Then at number four on my top five MLB free agents available, Xander Bogaerts, the Boston Red Sox shortstop. He has had just a phenomenal season with the Red Sox this year. The Red Sox had just an awful season, but he was their main bright spot. I mean, he was great defensively and great offensively, and really their only bright spot they had all season. He's very durable as well. He is pretty much a five-tool player out there. So whoever gets him is getting a great shortstop as well. It's sounding like the Red Sox are probably the front runners at this point. But it also looks like Bogaerts is entertaining some offers from a lot of other teams. And I'm also hearing that the San Francisco Giants are in the mix for him. So I like to hear that. We got Correa and Bogaerts who we're in the mix for. So it would be nice if we could actually land one of these guys we're in the mix for, rather than just have it be a rumor, but we'll see what happens. Then at number three on my top five MLB free agents still available right now, starting pitcher Jacob DeGrom just spent his career with the New York Mets. He is a fantastic starting pitcher. It's possible he's going to stay with the Mets. Honestly, I kind of feel like he should stay with the Mets, but then who the hell knows what kind of money is being offered to him out there. There's rumblings that he could also sign with the Texas Rangers. Which is very interesting because, you know, Bruce Bochy, he is the new manager of the Rangers. So I kind of feel like the Rangers are going to be that new team that we start to see come up and start to make some waves and start to make some noise, because they've been in baseball purgatory now for the last, like, what, five-ish years now. They haven't been a relevant team for a few years now. And so I think Bochy's definitely going to make them relevant. I think he's going to make them a much better and stronger team. And I kind of feel like DeGrom is a dude he's really going to want as a starting pitcher. To me, he reminds me of what Bruce Bochy would want as a pitcher. He's a solid pitcher, too. He has suffered some injuries over the last couple of seasons. But other than that, he's a very good pitcher. I feel like Mets are where he's going to go, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him head to Texas either. Then at number two on my top five MLB free agents still available, Trey Turner, Los Angeles Dodgers shortstop. He was drafted by the Nationals, so he spent most of his time with them. He did win a World Series with them as well. There's only one reason why he's not above number one, and that's just because number one had such a phenomenal season. But in my opinion, I feel like Trey Turner probably is the best free agent available just because of how he's still young. And so if you sign this dude to like a 10-year deal, you're going to get the best out of that 10-year deal. Whereas if you sign like Aaron Judge, for example, so I'm just going to go ahead and spoiler alert, he's my number one is Aaron Judge, of course. But Aaron Judge is 30, whereas Trey Turner Aaron Judge, he's probably got a good, like, 5 years left in him, where Trey Turner's probably got a good, like, 8 to 10 years left in him. Plus, Trey Turner plays the shortstop position, and he's great at doing everything when it comes to being a hitter. He can hit you home runs. He could get runs batted in. He gets on base. He could steal bases. But then also at the shortstop position, he's an amazing shortstop. I mean, he really was the first overall pick for the Nationals many moons ago. So he is a solid, solid free agent. And I feel like whoever gets him is getting probably the best free agent available other than Aaron Judge, but that's really just because of Judge's amazing season that he had. But right now it's looking like the Giants also are in contention for Trey Turner, but it's looking like the Phillies are also looking at him as well, and then possibly the Dodgers again, but who knows with them. So Trey Turner's out there. And then, as I just mentioned, my number one top five MLB free agent available is Aaron Judge, and it's really just because of, he's coming off of a 62 home run season. That's a record-breaking freaking season, so dude's getting paid regardless of what team he's going to. Of course, he's spent his entire career with the New York Yankees. He's also an outfielder, a very good outfielder as well. I would say Trey Turner in the field is much better and more reliable than Aaron Judge. But hey, Aaron Judge, you can't complain about what the dude has done out in the field. Right now, of course, the Yankees are the front runner, I would say, for Judge. He is entertaining ideas from the Giants, and I would love to see him in a Giants uniform, but I just kind of feel like Aaron Judge is a Yankee. I've felt that since the day he was drafted. I remember when he first came up, and his first month with the Yankees, I just remember watching him and like, this dude is a Yankee. And I feel like he's just a Yankee through and through. The fact that he hit 62 home runs this year as a Yankee, that's the vibe I get from him. So I feel like the Yankees and Aaron Judge, they're going back to each other. But if you think I have an issue with the Giants being involved in the rumor mill with 4 out of 5 of these guys I just mentioned, I have no issues with that. I'm hoping we could sign at least one of them. Like I said, for me personally, I would be most excited to hear the Giants sign Trey Turner just because of his durability. I feel like he's going to help not only offensively but defensively as well, and we need help at basically every position. And he's a good leader. He has postseason experience, so that helps us out as well. So I personally would like to see Trey Turner be in a Giants uniform, but I'll really take any one of 5 of these guys. All great players, and it's kind of crazy to see that all of them are available because really they're all MVP candidates as well. I mean, Aaron Judge, of course, won the MVP. Trey Turner, I feel like he could because he's just that dominating at what he does. Jacob deGrom, of course, it could be a Cy Young Award winner any season he's pitching. Xander Bogaerts, easily, is another type MVP type player. And then Correa as well. So, and then all of these guys, they have postseason experience. So I feel like whoever signs any one of those players is getting a great player. But as a San Francisco Giants fan, I would love to see Trey Turner in a San Francisco Giants uniform, but I'll take any one of these 5 dudes. As long as we're signing somebody, because last offseason was an extreme disappointment as a Giants fan, and I don't want to see that shit happen again. So, all right, y'all, enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you motherfuckers on Monday.